When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today we're talking about what protocols we use for aesthetics in general, not just our hair like we usually talk about.
Yeah, this is body aesthetics, facial aesthetics, how we try to maintain a youthful look, or dare I say it, anti-aging protocols. So this covers exercise, supplements, procedures, and more. So stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. And some of you may have noticed that we are a little bit red today, but our editor has assured us that he can correct that in post, so we will look flawless. So we'll see how that goes. But what are we talking about today?
Yeah, or at least no worse than normal, maybe better than normal in the future. We are talking about our aesthetic protocols, how you can get the most bang for your buck, and what is worth it and what's not.
Hashtag anti-aging, one of our favorite hashtags.
That's what I should have said. That gets more clicks and listens. So this is your anti-aging protocol, specifically cosmetic anti-aging protocol.
Yeah, and I think that we tend to take a reasonably frugal approach to this. I'm certainly not spending $2 million to reverse our age. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've kind of called this, the Kirkland brand Brian Johnson protocol. This is the tech Brian Johnson, not the Liver King Brian Johnson.
Yeah, I don't know if I would want that guy's anti-aging protocol.
Oh, the Kirkland version would be pretty easy. You just go to Costco and buy all the meat and eat it. Yeah. Buy a couple 2x4s to sleep on in the basement.
Yeah, definitely don't buy any sunscreen for that protocol, for Liver King protocol. But yeah, we're talking about the Blueprint protocol, the guy that says, you know, forget dying, humans don't have to die, et cetera, et cetera. You know, spend millions of dollars on your body, except maybe instead of spend millions of dollars on your body, our protocol is spend hundreds of dollars on your body.
Yeah, or even tens of dollars, like a sunscreen. That's that you just mentioned. Very reasonable start to anti-aging.
Yep.
So candidly, I think this is a pretty interesting guy to follow. It seems to be quite transparent with what he's doing and tracking results. But we can go ahead and get into the protocol because he has similar interests in preventing hair loss, stimulating hair regrowth, and also helping to rejuvenate and improve the appearance of the skin. So we have a custom hair formulation here. This is publicly available on his website. And it contains some caffeine.
Okay, that's decent. Caffeine, 1%.
Some finasteride.
0.25%. So that about 30% of that's going systemic. So anytime somebody's on a topical finasteride, you're wondering, are they really trying to, like, you know, are they not going to tolerate oral finasteride, or what's the reason why this is topical?
Yeah, and then minoxidil, sort of a whole cocktail of ingredients
5% here. 5% minoxidil, pretty standard. The azelaic acid to, you know, try to dry out the hair and maybe take care of some sebum. Usually azelaic acid is not necessary unless you have a particularly oily scalp. Diclofenac 0.5%, that's Voltaren, that's interesting.
Yeah, to reduce inflammation, presumably.
Yeah.
Although it's an NSAID.
It's no longer in vogue to have corticosteroids in hair. Used to be, you know, there'd be like low to low moderate potency corticosteroid. Mm-hmm. And if somebody has an autoimmune cause of alopecia, then that still is reasonable from time to time, but you don't want to thin the scalp too much. But yeah, next is tea tree oil, 5%. I think this is in the intelligent volumizing shampoo that we call ketoconazole shampoo. So this is also reasonable. Rosemary, ginkgo biloba, biotin, 0.01%. It's kind of funny that there's biotin, and then low-dose melatonin, which is also a reasonable ingredient.
Yeah, and I sort of wonder about how each of these is affecting the permeability of the scalp, mainly for the absorption of finasteride. I imagine if you have a couple of those things in it that are oil-based, that they're sort of encapsulating that finasteride or making less of the solution evaporate, and you're getting probably more absorption than you would if it was purely an aqueous solution.
Yeah. And we just did a podcast that we can link here on our own hair loss protocols, what we do during fertility phases, what we do when we're not in a fertility phase. I call it health phase. Not that fertility phase is an unhealth phase, but we'll link that here. People know that I'm a fan of topical ketoconazole, shampoo, tea tree, pumpkin seed oil in some cases. But in general, if you're going to have that many things, that's not a formulation that is ideal for most people.
Yeah. And again, kind of, is the juice worth the squeeze once you get past the really the first three ingredients there?
So biggest bang for the buck is minoxidil. After that, your finasteride or dutasteride. And then everything else is really secondary and on an as-needed basis.
Then we have scalp PRP combined with injectable dutasteride, combined with exosomes, combined with A-cell. So the PRP, the cadence here is pretty reasonable, every 60 to 90 days. I think I'll probably land somewhere around that 60-day mark for my scalp PRP. However, I will not be using a 10x PRP concentration. That seems a bit high. And again, I don't know this beyond a shadow of a doubt, but some of the literature suggests once you get past a 6x concentration, it actually has a little bit of an inflammatory effect as opposed to a regenerative effect.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
we like a 5 to 6x concentration. Yeah. We use a double spin machine.
Yeah. So is it worth that extra sort of, you know, risk if you know you can already get good results with a 6x? More isn't always better, I guess is what I would say. 120 cc's, that's quite a bit of blood. But if you're concentrating it that much, you're going to have to pull off a lot of platelet poor plasma.
Yeah, we pulled 30 cc's of our own blood this morning. And we did 5 to 6x concentration. We microneedled some of it in all the way up to the scalp as much as reasonably possible. And even into the scalp to some degree, we microneedled. Mm. And we also did injections of both PRP and exosomes. We like the Benev adipose-derived exosomes. And we'll talk about our regimen more later, but there's certainly some similarities. We did not do dutasteride mesotherapy. When we do, we usually don't use 0.1%. It's a decently high concentration. And I bet that that is going systemic to some degree to him. So it's kind of interesting. He's doing dutasteride mesotherapy. Some of it's going systemic. And he's also doing finasteride topical. Some of it's going systemic. Again, probably overcomplicated for the average person.
A little bit less hassle. Again, if you're someone who is able to tolerate, I don't know, at least 90% of people, assuming if healthy hormone status, can tolerate oral finasteride or oral dutasteride.
Yep.
So it'd be a much simpler, probably better bang for your buck sort of regimen. And then we both forgot our laser caps. That's the next step in the regimen.
Yeah. I mean, if you're having all this, you're doing microneedling, you're doing injections. Because if you look at the PRP studies, even when you use saline, all the little tiny injections from the syringes still actually have about half as good of a result as PRP.
Yeah, you're aerating the scalp like you would a lawn.
Yeah, core aeration. So it is for sure seems superfluous. I guess if you never wanted to microneedle, you never wanted to have any sort of scalp injections of any type, then maybe this could be reasonable.
It's sort of like a kitchen sink approach. It's like, well, you're just going to do every single vector that has shown some efficacy in hair regrowth. So at the end of the day, you know, wearing a cap for this guy, maybe not that big of a deal for me. I don't see the upside to it or the value for the, you know, small marginal benefit that I may get from that.
Yeah, definitely seems superfluous. And then he mentioned some markers, gray-white markers, and then he mentioned his Norwood scale. I can't remember if he's talked in the past if he's had a small FUE, like a small mini transplant.
I don't know. It wouldn't be uncommon in the circle of, you know, tech and wealth for people to be getting some touch-ups done here and there.
Yeah, I probably would too if I was in his shoes and his...
Yeah, I plan to at some point.
Yeah, so... Next is his daily protocol. I guess this is the daily skincare protocol, face wash, other active creams. Not sure what that means. And then vitamin E, vitamin C, Ferulic, B3, Aslake, etc. Plus CeraVe AM, CeraVe Body, and CeraVe PM on face. And then on top of all that, even after things like the azelaic acid, he still does a tretinoin, and it says 0.1%. Surely that doesn't mean face.
It's a pretty high concentration, and that on top of the azelaic acid, I mean, maybe he has quite oily skin at baseline. I saw something about him maybe taking Accutane recently, but I can't comment too much on that because I'm not sure where I saw that or if it's accurate.
Tretinoin 0.1%, if you apply it over a huge area and you're religious about applying it, is not too dissimilar from the Accutane.
Yeah, isotretinoin, so, exactly. I mean,
very similar. Maybe he should watch the Skin Science podcast with Dr. Thomas Hitchcock. The dose also likely makes the poison with retinoid derivatives, whether it is max strength topical tretinoin or oral isotretinoin. And obviously there's some use cases with this, but there's a reason why some things like retinol are over the counter and like low strength adapalene 0.1% and the highest doses of tretinoin are prescription. They can affect your skin microbiome. Again, Dr. Thomas Hitchcock is more of an expert than me on this. But I know that with their products, the BioJuve topical probiotic line that we carry, they've taken retinoids completely out. So, if you're going to care about your microbiome in your gut, you should probably also think about your microbiome in the skin. There is some degree of continuity between the two.
Yeah. Then, like we mentioned, a UVA plus B mineral sunscreen, UV environmental filters. I assume this is like in a vehicle if you're driving or in your home, the windows are blocking UV. Yeah. Again, the sunscreen probably doing the bulk of the work here, the 90% of blocking UV if you're putting it on before the sun is up, especially at its most intense time. Then I think that's a great investment. Personally, I'll use a mineral sunscreen around my eyes. And then a chemical sunscreen on the remainder of my face and neck.
Yep. And then I'll also think about your lips, especially if you're going to get a lot of sun exposure and you're predisposed to skin cancers. But regardless, also think about your lips. I always think about my ears, the tops of the ears, where they're going to get the most direct UV exposure. And the nose, as you mentioned. And then, of course, think about the UV blocking nail polish, which I always wear. Just kidding, not that.
So you don't get a melanoma under the fingernail.
Yeah.
Or under the toenail.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're really predisposed and have to be exposed to the sun a lot in those areas.
Next, these are things that he, I guess, was trialing at the time. This went on the website. So non-bleeding microneedling with a HA, hyaluronic acid, I assume, serum.
Why would you do this instead of just like cavitation ultrasound to drive in hyaluronic acid or exosomes? I do not know. Microneedling, you want to treat to either pinpoint bleeding or erythema, like we have.
Yeah, and also with the non-bleeding microneedling, this isn't all that dissimilar if we skip down to these micro-Botox injections. So you're not really creating a trauma, you know, a stimulus for the skin to recover or heal from, but it's something that, again, the more trauma you induce, the better the result.
Yep.
You have a podcast that'll be coming out with Dr. Williams, right?
Yeah. And we talk about Dr. Williams is a facial plastic surgeon and does his practice is, you know, almost exclusively aesthetic. And we talk a lot about our personal regimens, where we use Botox, how we use Botox. We talk about microneedling. We talk about exosomes as well. But with the botulinum toxin, there's several types. Molecule size matters. I've also talked about this with Alec McCarthy and how some of them you can microneedle in, like daxibotulinum toxin or Inca botulinum toxin. And some of them are too large to microneedle in. But yes, they do have good evidence for pore shrinkage, also for things like acne in general. But you want to either inject it dermally or have something to drive it into the skin in order to do so.
Yeah, and this may be because I know in the past there has been I think he had a whole body or at least facial laser resurfacing. Mm-hmm. So if he's using that sort of sledgehammer to create the trauma and the end result, maybe he feels it's not worth it, or more accurately, his medical team doesn't feel it's worth it to add in just traditional old microneedling because it's not aggressive enough. But for me, I think traditional microneedling is a good balance.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we do not currently do radio frequency microneedling in this clinic. There's definitely good candidates for that. And some people get Morpheus over their entire body, which actually we should probably mention later when he talks about lasering. But the next thing on his list is Sculptra. I believe this is what our good friend, Dr. Alec McCarthy studied when he was getting his PhD in regenerative medicine. This is considered a regenerative aesthetic product. It can be used a couple different ways. It's kind of the competitor of Radies.
Yeah, and then Renuva, and this is an interesting one, mentions autologous fat transfer. You know, as people age, they tend to lose some of those fat pads in the face. In some cases, they're removed, and we find out, oh, that's not necessarily what is going to be in vogue 10 years from now. So people have had a lot of buccal fat removal, I think, is a trend, and now it's sort of moving back the other direction.
I usually take mine in and out, kind of like chewing gum.
But then I saw an article that claimed that he had donor fat transfer because he didn't have enough body fat. So I don't know. It says autologous on the website, so I would tend to defer to that. But I guess there's at least some speculation that there were donor fat cells. So I imagine that means he's on an immunosuppressive regimen if you're getting donor fat injected into you, right?
That must be why he's on the rapamycin. Or I know you can have like a miracle donor baby if someone has like, you know, a rare cancer and you need a bone marrow transplant. Maybe he had a designer baby with the HLA that he has for that. That is
so farming your
that's
own.
That's what I would do if I was a billionaire.
Yeah. Your billionaire stack. That's a stay tuned for a future episode.
Make sure to bank your designer baby's umbilical stem cell in order to use for your fat transfer. Obviously completely a joke there, but next is whole body LED. Talks about the 630 nanometers red. If that's for mitochondrial health, I'd think that'd be 670, which is the deep red, not 630. So that's kind of interesting. And then 830 infrared, so the IR phototherapy. It doesn't say exactly why he's doing this, but phototherapy does have good evidence. Obviously, with the salt facials that we do after doing the salt exfoliation, we do the cavitation ultrasound and then phototherapy, often for things like acne or to drive particles in. But this is on his whole body.
Yeah. And the objective there looks like is accelerated healing, skin health, helping with anxiety and depression, sleep.
Only if applied to forehead. Does that 670 nanometer light that is not present in that wavelength, does it penetrate the cerebrum?
I feel like it's more likely that by being exposed to the forehead, it's getting in through the eyes.
Why wouldn't you just expose it a $10 670 nanometer deep red flashlight?
What if I put a red piece of paper over a spotlight?
Or that, if it was, I guess it would have to be the perfect color of red, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Of note, there is good evidence for retina health. And of course, if light hits the retina, it's going to go along the optic nerve, stimulate the pineal gland. So this does have potential health. It's just...
If I was going to pick a regimen like this, I would actually have the light oscillate between like a 570 nanometer up to 870 and back down. So I'm getting a spectrum of different lights and benefits so that if let's just say by dumb luck or unluckiness, I pick the two spectrums that don't work, then at least I'm getting like a range as opposed to fixing myself to these two specific spectrums.
He bought his from this red dotted website, probably thousands of dollars. We should link one that's like $10 from Amazon. So if you want to get your red light therapy.
Or maybe a
for your
tool
retina.
To measure the wavelength. Those can't be too expensive.
Yeah. I have seen that some of the sellers on Amazon say certified to be 670 or 630 or whatever the IR wavelength is.
Yeah, I'm always a bit of a skeptic.
Yeah.
If I decide to delve into red light therapy, I will probably be verifying those claims.
If there is not a biohacker YouTuber that has done that yet, we will be attempting to do that soon. So we'll give it a shot. We'll put some light on that situation.
So what did we have done today?
400 million exosomes along our hairlines. Again, I mentioned the Benev exosomes. They seem to be of the many different types of exosomes that kind of like our colleague group has tried, either personally or from our good friends. We like those exosomes, and anecdotally and in the evidence that we can find so far, there's excellent evidence, as Dr. Williams and I had discussed previously. Now, these are technically approved just to use topically on the skin or topically in a microneedle. But
so these were done off-label.
Off-label.
Well, I guess
yeah,
everything is going to be off-label once you get too deep into aesthetics.
So bleeding edge, in my opinion, is putting exosomes straight into your veins via IV catheter. Yeah.
We kind of laughed about this a bit earlier because it's a viscous solution. So if you're shooting that into a bag of IV fluids, LR, or saline, or some vitamin infusion, it seems very likely to me that it would settle at the bottom of your IV bag and probably not all go directly into your system. You're probably losing out on at least a bit of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Unless you're shaking the bag every so often.
Yeah. And they're also pretty, like you mentioned, pretty difficult to reconstitute. Reminded us of like Rocephin or Zosyn in the hospital where you really have to shake it up. So depending on what your provider's doing, you're probably not getting all those exosomes that they say. But exosomes, of course, is kind of like a delivery package that can very easily combine into a cell and has growth factors that are produced secondary to stem cells. For example, from adipose tissue, you can get them from umbilical tissue. You can get them from a lot of places.
Yeah, which the Benev are adipose cell derived.
Correct. We could probably talk about exosomes for quite a lot longer, but again, our cutting edge is injecting dermally, almost like a TB injection. The bleeding edge would be letting them go systemic and potentially grow things, whether it's a tumor or anything else, without any discretion.
Yeah, just this sounds like a bad idea to me, injecting things systemically that are going to go wherever the blood supply is the richest, potentially.
Cosmetic anti-aging, but in every other way, pro-aging.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. We also had what's known as a vampire facial. So for the microneedling, we use the skin pen device. This has been used in a number of different clinical trials, and we use 5 to 6x concentrated PRP, including the hairline and temples. I guess we sort of started out of order here, but to be clear, the microneedling was done prior to the exosome injections.
Yeah. I also took some of my PRP 5 to 6x concentrated, and I had some of the nurses inject that along my scalp as well. And then you injected some exosomes in my scalp. So quite a bit. Seems like a lot to us. I guess we should mention the prices. I think we add on the exosomes to this for something like $150. That's like 1/4 the price of what most clinics charge for a full treatment of exosomes. One vial of exosomes would have 2 billion, but we just put, I think I had 400 million, you had 800 million.
Yeah, did you draw up
two cc's,
mLs?
Yeah. Two full cc's.
Then that would be 800 million in my case.
Yeah, a vampire facial is usually at least $1,000 because the raw materials for both the cartridge for the skin pen and all the PRP supplies and everything else in general, it does add up to quite a bit. We use a mask after retreat, and then we have a hydrator after retreat as well. And some of us use BioJuve afterwards. You can augment it, skin pen plus BioJuve, or you can just use the skin pen hydrator after. But yeah, I think we sell those for 600. I actually forget.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We can probably flash a snippet of our pricing up on the screen here because our staff honestly keeps better track of that than we do.
We're not very good businessmen, but when it comes to promoting the prices or whatnot, but thousands of you, our prices are way better than other clinics that do it because we're in it for, I guess, the fun of it. We don't have to do this to feed our families, but it would be nice to be able to continue to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. And fortunately, we're both in situations where we have plenty of iron to spare, so we can tolerate the phlebotomy and the blood donation, which is interesting because I believe, unless something has changed, that Brian Johnson still adheres to a plant-based or vegetarian diet.
Yep.
So fairly low in iron. High in protein, which is good because you do need protein to help regenerate that collagen and repair wounding that happens.
Yep.
But I do wonder about whether that iron is a rate limiting step in terms of how often he can do PRP, phlebotomize, mm-hmm. these bloodletting and then reinfusing with like albumin, that sort of thing that I think he's done. Running too low on ferritin, probably not a great idea.
Yeah, especially if you're going to do a lot of high impact athletic activities. Yeah, I always like to estimate my hematocrit by looking at that centrifuge tube, about what percent of it's spun down red blood cells and what percent's plasma.
Isn't that what they do in the lab? When they remember to draw the purple top?
Assuming that they do, I guess. But supposedly I also have two different hemochromatosis markers, but I've never had to donate blood.
Yeah, and this was, I actually had some real genetic testing done recently, and it confirmed my hemochromatosis marker. I have a mutation in the H63, and it does appear to be at least somewhat clinically penetrant. So I manage my ferritin levels with phlebotomy, PRP, monitor those regularly. And I also found out that I had a biotin, not biotin itself, but a biotinase SNP, where I probably do not break down or absorb biotin for my food as well. Which is interesting because I haven't had a serum biotin level checked ever. Mm-hmm. Usually there's no need to do so, but it makes me think, hey, you know, getting one of the full spectrum, you know, blood nutrient panels is probably a good bet to identify a low hanging fruit like that. Now I'm just going to take biotin, measure serum levels, and I can feel my temples filling in as we speak. Just from the biotin, I'm sure.
Wow, a biotin hyper responder. I wonder how many percent, I wonder how common that SNP is.
I think it's about 1 in 100,000. It's not particularly common.
That is pretty rare.
Yeah, and I don't think it's the worst. There's a form of this that is an inborn error of metabolism where it can cause developmental delays and, you know, neurological issues, issues with, I believe, muscle function as well. Mm-hmm. But in my case, it's just a heterozygous SNP here, and I probably just had slightly lower than normal biotin levels, I would bet.
Yeah.
If anything. I mean, I do eat a lot of animal products, and I eat a lot of, not eat a lot of, but I do take a multivitamin that has some biotin in it.
Do you think that has anything to do with why your skin is so much thicker than mine?
I don't know. It's interesting because we had very differing experiences, which is why, you know, you can't just use a cookie cutter protocol on every skin type that walks into the clinic.
Yep.
Like in your example, they started with the 0.25 millimeter microneedling.
Very superficial.
We kind of had a suspicion about this because we talked about our home microneedling. You know, we did with the back in the day, another microneedling device, now with the intelligent pin. And you were shocked at how deep I was microneedling. I'm like, oh no, I don't like bleed at that. Mm-hmm. You're like, is blood just like running down your scalp? I'm like, no. So we had a bit of a clue there. And then with the clinical grade microneedler, 0.25 millimeters, you had pretty immediate, you know, erythema, pinpoint bleeding. And that's all you need to treat to for efficacy based on the data.
Yeah, I sure did. I felt like I needed to sneeze part of the time too.
I did sneeze.
Yeah, the BLT, benzocaine, lidocaine, tetracaine, I believe, that kind of like triple combo cream numbed up thing is pretty good. But yeah, definitely some histaminergic response and lots of vasodilation in the skin. When I exercise, I also tend to get that flushed face. And I even just looking at the camera here, it looks like my face is still pretty significantly flushed. It subsides relatively slowly, and I have not taken any citrulline, tadalafil. I just took my normal anabolic stack, my normal
the beta
15
alanine.
Grams per day of anabolics.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had a 0.75 millimeter depth everywhere except for, I believe, on my nose and around the orbital rim, areas where the skin is a bit thinner that you don't want that sort of depth. What I would be really interested to see is a trial in, let's say, androgenic alopecia, something relatively easy to measure a change in. You have a, say, microneedling plus minoxidil with something like the intelligent pin, microneedling plus minoxidil with something like the skin pin, and see just how much of a difference there is.
Probably not a huge difference if you did an adequately good job on both.
And it depends on the person's compliance. I mean, I think most people going in and having this done professionally, it's probably going to be a more thorough microneedling session.
Like, better numbing.
You know, I'm paying for it, so I might as well get my money's worth. Whereas if you're doing it at home, you may think, well, you know, that's probably good enough.
Yeah.
So I think you still would see better efficacy with the skin pin, but it would be really interesting to see if it was a marginal difference or a pretty substantial one.
Yeah. And it could go either way. I would like to see that study for sure. But yeah, as far as a home microneedling device, the intelligent one seems pretty good. But if I had the choice, I would still use a skin pin.
Yeah. They're just a little pricey for home use.
Yeah, a little bit pricey. Yeah, I think that mostly covers it. We haven't really touched on our Botox or Xeomin regimens, but I guess if you're trying to summarize all this, all these things of what people should take away from it, if they're trying to do more of a preventive, like high value regimen, what's your A tier or strong tier investment in your aesthetic anti-aging, then you would do your individualized regimen of preventive Xeomin. You do every couple months, PRP, ideally with microneedling, whether it's for face, scalp, both, ideally both. Depending on age, you can add some PRP under the eyes, nasolabial folds as well. Maybe a little bit of Radiesse, especially in very advanced ages. Although we're not against the Sculptra that Brian Johnson uses. And then past that, we mentioned the sunscreen and things like exosomes, plus or minus, depending on your situation.
Yeah. And interestingly, aside from sunscreen, no one necessarily needs these things. But if it is an area that is important to you for your overall health, appearance, your mental health, then there are places that are better or worse to spend your money. So if you're getting a ton of serums that can be quite expensive and are not really doing a whole lot, then sometimes those funds are better put, you know, elsewhere in something that has better clinical outcomes. I guess we're sticklers for the outcomes, not necessarily the dollar amount spent.
Yeah.
The best return per dollar is probably sunscreen still.
Probably so. Or showering and washing your face. And that's probably a good note to end it on. As always, thank you for your time. And please put any questions, including your regimen or how you might change your regimen or whatnot in the comments below, whether it's YouTube or Instagram. Both of those places are fine.
Yep. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for watching. May God bless you with health and happiness.